show that looks at Kansas City baseball's past, present, and future.
High fly ball. Motley going back to the track. No outs to go. The Royals have won the 1985 World Series.
Davis comes to the plate. Strike three called. It's over. They've done it. The Royals are World Series champions. The world champion Kansas City Royals.
This is the Kansas City Baseball Vault.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome in to the Kansas City Baseball Vault, brought to you by Kelly's Westport Inn, a Baseball Prospectus affiliate. Folks, it's happening. Royals baseball, it's here. We're raised Royal, and we're ready to talk Royals baseball. Some exciting things have been happening lately. If for those of you who have been paying attention, and likely if you're listening to this show, you've been paying attention to the Royals, I would hope anyway. So before we get into all that, introductions, of course, the man who is on a bit of a hot streak himself, Michael Engel. Mike, how are you doing on this yet another balmy summer type thing?
I think it's the first official day of summer, in fact, which, okay, could have fooled me because it felt like it the last couple weeks. But I'm good. The Royals were smart enough to get their game in before we recorded, and thus they won. So they should just keep doing that.
An interesting trend we've developed, as we've talked before, the seemingly curse of the Kansas City Baseball Vault. When they play while recording, things don't seem to turn out as well. Yet
they can even have leads, yes. And they just blow them. It's yes. Weird.
And yet on days in which they play and get the entire game completed before the show records, we've had pretty good luck with that so far, and including today, which is a very exciting game that the Royals won to take the series from the Boston Red Sox, where they go down 4-2 early in the game. And things are not looking very good. And then Boston, in the eighth inning, bottom of the eighth, walks the bases loaded. And up comes Salvador Perez, who I wasn't able to watch. Unfortunately, just kind of following along on Twitter and other various means. But from what I gathered, swung at many a ball that was not in the strike zone. Yeah. And yet he was, as he so often does, he was able to connect with the ball himself that he sent over the fence into the stands for his first career grand slam for Salvador Perez, 15th home run of the season for him, clearing the bases and getting the go-ahead runs across the plate, and the Royals cruised from there to victory. Kelvin Herrera came on, shook off some just some poor performances recently, to be honest, from him, and was lighting up the radar gun, including closing out the game on a 101-mile-per-hour pitch. Now, Herrera was a little bit more fond of that, you know, throwing that hard when he first kind of came up, and he was hitting close to 100 and hitting 100 sometimes, you know, a few years ago. It's been a little bit, though, since I've seen him hit that hard, high on the gun, even at Kauffman, where it's pretty obvious the gun is juiced. But regardless, pretty cool. Hopefully that'll kind of get him back on track, and whatever's been causing him to have the issues that he's had so far this season, he can kind of put behind him. And, you know, Mike, these Royals, they just keep on winning here. It's, you know, they, let's see, let me pull up the schedule results. I want to see, I can't remember what exactly their lowest record was off the top of my head.
Well, they ended April at 7-16.
16. They were 12-21 again. So there's twice they've been 9 games under. That looks like 19-27. That's 8 games.
They basically spent all of May, more or less, and a good chunk, like the first week or so of June, going from six games under to eight games under. They would win two, they would lose one, they would win one, they would lose two. They would, like, they, I don't think for almost a month there they didn't have a streak winning or losing of more than two games, which is like, weird. But they just kind of stayed in that zone, and you know, it was right after that nine-game losing streak. And then they just kind of got weirdly consistently, you know, win one, lose one, win two, lose two for a while. So, you know, they had that really bad streak in April where they just could not score runs. But otherwise, it's, you know, they've played a little more consistent and with the hot streak. So, yeah, right now they win this game. They've won, what, eight of their last 10, and at this stage, they're probably it's probably the most excited you can be about a team that's still a game under 500.
Right.
It's very strange, but it's like you're starting to see people, you know, with that belief again of, oh, okay, here we go. You know, don't let the Royals get hot is what a couple of people on Twitter are saying. It's like, don't let it happen. And the Royals won, you know, six games in a row on that road trip. And then they came back to Kansas City. They win this series. They're doing pretty well. They're finally hitting a little bit more consistently and all the way up and down the lineup instead of, you know, just waiting on Moose to hit a homer and Hosmer to get a base hit. You know, it's everybody's doing a little bit of something, and the starting pitching is kind of rounded into a little better form, you know, here and there. So, yeah, it's pretty fun.
Yeah, I mean, they're 13-6 in June. And
that's fine.
Yeah, I'll take that. And they, as they're a game under 500, we had those few weeks where it seemed like, you know, they were still just kind of stagnant, and we're like, okay, the rest of the division is doing the same thing, just kind of middling around. The Royals need to make a move here. And, you know, unfortunately, as the Royals have heated up, the Cleveland has heated up on their own a little bit, not to the same extent, but they've put some wins together, including a big sweep of the Twins this past weekend. And so, but even still, the Royals have gained some ground. So we remember the three shows in a row we recorded, they were 5.5 games back. Well, as of today, before Cleveland's playing, probably as we record this, but even with that game still pending, the Royals are three games behind now. So if Cleveland loses, the Royals will be 2.5 games back. Of course, if they win, they'll be back to 3.5 like when they started the day. But, you know, that's at worst a game and a half from where they were – a game and a half better than where they were last week and two games better than where they were for that long stretch there. So, you know – It is starting to feel like that. And you got to think, if you're Cleveland, you know, you're probably looking like, oh, man, you know, I don't think you want a team like the Royals breathing down your neck right now, knowing that, you know, how good the Royals have been the last few years. You know, last year they weren't as good, but, you know, 14-15, obviously, fantastic years. So they, you know, the Cleveland has to know, okay, these guys have been around. They know how to get this job done, and they know as well as anybody that when the Royals start rolling, things start going their way, it gets into that uh-oh territory where it feels like no matter what you do, you're going to lose to the Royals. And that's kind of the feeling that you had specifically with you know, kind of with this recent road trip. Every time the Royals kind of got down or anything, you know, or every time they needed something to happen, you kind of felt like it was happening that way. And, you know, early in the season, they were getting zero offensive production, but, you know, on this recent stretch, you know, the offense is definitely doing their part, and pitching has actually been pretty good. I mean, you look in that same stretch of these last, you know, 10 games, you know, they've given up, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, seven games of those 10, they've given up three runs or less. So there's, I mean, Royals are looking pretty solid right now. And I got to think, if you're Cleveland, and definitely if you're the Twins, you got to be a little scared. And you got to think, man, it's the last thing we want is the Royals coming after us. Specifically, you know, with the Twins being just still a young team, still trying to figure out if they're for real. You know, a couple of years ago, they had, you know, that kind of surprise season. And then, you know, they kind of faltered, and then now it's You know, they're going to be good soon and a little bit more consistent, but they're still trying to, they're still in that 2011, 12, 13 Royals kind of phase of getting all their young talent and getting them all on the same page and working together and all that kind of stuff. So, you know, if they're ready, they'll step up, but coming up against Cleveland last weekend, you know, they thought they were ready and kind of voiced that in the media with some of the comments that they were making. And it did not appear that they were ready on the field as Cleveland swept them. So, but it'll be interesting that Rose have the day off tomorrow. And then Toronto comes into Kansas City. And there's a big stretch here. So including the Toronto series, which kind of funny that, you know, the Royals and the Blue Jays both kind of a lot of pending free agents and kind of semi like, should we just go for it one last year or should we try to rebuild now or what should we do? Both were in similar positions in the offseason and both decided to kind of keep the band together and go for it this year. And both started out very poorly. Yeah. Blue Jays were like 1-9, I think, to start the season. But now going into today, of course, before the Royals won, they both had the exact same record of 34-36. And Rose obviously a game better now, and Toronto comes in this weekend to play as a renewal of the ALCS rivalry. And they go to Detroit, obviously a big matchup there. They've surpassed now Detroit in the division, but, you know, got to win your division games. And then the big one, they come home for a four-game series against Minnesota. So
revenge.
Yes, if you come home to the friendly confines of Kauffman Stadium, and if you can shut down the Twins on a four-game stretch, you know, you can, you know, obviously sweep would be amazing, but, you know, win 3 out of 4 for Minnesota in that stretch, then you're at that point, you know, barring something catastrophic with the Toronto and Detroit series, you know, you're likely going to pass Minnesota at that point if you haven't already for second place in the division, and then you're going to be breathing down Cleveland's neck even heavier, if you will. So, you know, this As the calendar turns from June into July and you start kind of eyeing that trade deadline of July 31st, this next 10-game stretch here is going to be huge because they figure to possibly compete with Toronto for a wild card spot. Detroit, obviously, division foe, and then Minnesota's ahead of them in the division right now, and they're gonna need to be able to take care of business against Minnesota if they want to have a shot at winning this division. So these next 10 games are going to be really telling. You know, if they can have another stretch where they go 7-3 or something like that, then we're in business. All hands on deck. Let's get this thing moving. You know, if they go 3-7, it's like, well, maybe we need to reevaluate whether we want to sell or not. So hopefully that doesn't happen. But, I mean, talk me down, Mike. Am I getting too excited here? Or is this reasonable? I feel like I don't know.
Where they're at in the standings and relative to the other teams, I mean, you know, even they're 2 games away from a wild card spot too. The American League is just, it's packed. You know, there's not really a great team in the American League. You could argue the Astros, and they certainly have been playing well. But other than that, I mean, down the line, there's a lot of teams that are just hovering around 500, and they're not necessarily separating. The Yankees look good, but I mean, that's kind of it. The Red Sox have played well, but they haven't really been scoring like they did last year or in the past. So, yeah, I mean, as long as there's that kind of grouping in the middle, you've definitely got a shot. It's going to come down to the Royals being able to maintain consistency. You know, everybody, you know, Eric Hosmer, since for basically 2 months now, has just been hitting. You know, he had that awful start, but since April 26th, he's been solid. And it seems like anytime he almost gets into that, uh-oh, here we go again zone, you know, we mentioned it last week, you know, he just goes the other way and drives one out or hits it to the fence or whatever, and he's right back to it. And Lorenzo Cain's heated up. Sal Perez has been kind of streaky, but when he's hot, he's hot. They're starting to get a little bit out of Alcides Escobar, a little bit out of Alex Gordon now. So the lineup's got a little more production 1-9. And, you know, the pitching's giving them enough. Jason Hamill has adjusted after a rough start, and his last few starts have been very good. Jason Vargas has been really good all season, pretty much, like Cy Young kind of stuff. It's going to be weird when Jason Vargas is in the All-Star game.
Right.
I just would never, ever have guessed that. Ian Kennedy had a good start. His last time out today, it was all right for the first few innings, but kind of fell apart. So they're kind of and Matt Strom, we've talked about what he would do in his first start last week, and his first start was very, very good against the Angels. His second start wasn't as good, but it was against the Red Sox, who kind of worked him. I think he'll be fine. So they're kind of just waiting now to see when Danny Duffy can come back. He threw, I think, like 40 pitches off the mound yesterday through simulated batting practice. Well, not simulated. It was live batting practice. It wasn't simulated. he was sitting there on the Xbox.
Way to work out that oblique there.
There we go. Yeah. So he should go out and do some rehab starts pretty soon, like maybe next week. I think they said about 3 to 4 starts. So he might be like 3 weeks away. So he may come back right after the All-Star break. And at that stage, you've got about 2 weeks until you start looking at the trading deadline. And so if that's a point where the Royals are able to kind of hold on, that gives them an opportunity to maybe go and buy instead of selling. It was kind of funny with this Red Sox series. Some of the Boston reporters were asking Mike Moustakas, basically asking him, hey, how do you feel about, you know, how you might get traded? And one of them even was like, hey, Mike Moustakas would be perfect for the Red Sox, because the Red Sox always get what they want, obviously.
Right, of course.
And now it's like, well, you know, I wouldn't say that the Royals would be able to buy in the way that they did in 2015, where they got Zobrist and Cueto, because, you know, the farm system just isn't as deep as it was. Some of the guys like Manaea and Cody Reed and Brandon Finnegan, you know, they're just not that kind of pitching, you know, stardom and standout guys that the Royals have in their system at the moment. But, you know, you could see them go out and pick up maybe two or three guys to maybe be bench or platoon guys, and, you know, maybe a bullpen arm or something. That could maybe shore things up. And, you know, that would be a weird thing when a couple weeks ago, I was emotionally prepared for, like, all right, cool, we got about 5 weeks of Lorenzo Cain left on this team, and then he'll be in Washington. You know, because that's what it looked like. They weren't making up any ground. They weren't showing any signs of any additional life. And Danny Duffy had just gotten hurt. So what are you going to do? You know, you were looking at the prospect of Jake Junis and Eric Skoglund making a number of starts, and nothing against either of them, but, you know, they're not the guys that I would be turning to say, hey, let's turn this around. Skoglund got optioned back to Omaha with Strom going to the rotation, which is probably best for him. And Junis is, he'll probably be a very serviceable fifth starter. But it is going to be one of those things where the Royals are going to have to kind of stay afloat while they wait for Danny Duffy and they wait for Nate Karns to come back. So, you know, I think the stat is that since May, the Royals have the second most wins in the American League. So that's definitely a reason to be excited. It is tempered a bit by the fact that the Royals had that terrible April, and that's going to be an anchor
for the entire season,
they're going to have to succeed in spite of that. They've managed to make up 8 games off of that, and, you know, that's pretty impressive. They do still have a lot of work to do, but yeah, I mean, I'm excited too. It's, you know, when they're playing well, and I think, you know, on that road trip they scored more than 7 runs 5 games in a row, which hadn't been done since 1979. It's crazy. Wow. It's just, okay, that's pretty cool for a team that could barely score like 9 in a week and a half. You know, it's I'll take it. It's pretty great. So, you know, if they can continue to be consistent at all levels, you know, the home runs are finally coming with guys on in some cases, and other guys are hitting doubles, and they're still walking from like Kane and Hosmer and Gordon. So, yeah, there's a lot of stuff that's going right at the moment. So it's going to come down to, you know, Detroit doesn't – they feel like I think they're just kind of waiting and they're ready to sell when the time comes. The Twins, I don't buy the Twins. The Twins could be in first place at the end of the season by six games with one game to go. I still wouldn't buy it. Still wouldn't.
I'm with you on that.
I don't see it. And they're starting to fade a little bit now. The pitching has not been that great lately. So, yeah, I mean, it comes down to the Royals in Cleveland. And Cleveland had a rough start to this season, too, which left the door open for the Royals to at least, you know, be in the room. I mean, that's all you got to do is just kind of be in that room and have a chance and see what happens. You know, it's not like this is that different of a team from the one that won the World Series 2 years ago. The general core is there, you know, and that's why there was optimism from a lot of fans last year and still this year. It's just, it's the same group of guys for the most part. They just, you know, have to go out and actually do the performing. And, you know, over the last, you know, month, and especially just in the month of June, they've been doing that. So, yeah, that's reason to get excited. I think anytime you do that, you have to be realistic and say, well, look, you know, one 5-game losing streak can turf it all. And you know, the worst possible thing would be if they did that in, like, the first week of August. And didn't trade some of the guys they could have gotten some significant prospects back for. But, yeah, I don't know. I mean, anytime you believe, you got to be ready to suffer the heartbreak. And, you know, with this team, yeah, let's do it. Let's go for it. Let's make
let's
it
rock
happen.
And roll.
You fine know? With it. I can live with it.
And, you know, looking beyond, we talked about the next 10 games between Toronto, Detroit, and Minnesota. Excuse me. But you look at beyond that, and, you know, after the Minnesota series in Kansas City, they go on the road to play Seattle, and they play the Dodgers, you know, National League, interleague play. And then they play the Rangers and the Detroit again. So especially when you look at, you know, Seattle and Texas, you know, those are teams. Texas right now is 35-35. Seattle's 36-37. So they're right around where the Royals are, right in there for the wild card race. Because as you mentioned, everyone is just kind of bunched up right there in the American League. So, you know, not only just over the next 10 games, but then, you know, stretch that out over, you know, the next, you know, 10 games or so, 10, 12 games beyond that, and you're looking at getting a really good idea about where the Royals are going to stand, which ends up kind of right before the All-Star break. So if you think about the – or I'm sorry, All-Star break, before the trade deadline. So – their last homestand, when that ends, after they'll have Rangers, Detroit, and the White Sox, and that ends on July 23rd. And they'll go on. Then they'll go on the road to play Detroit, Boston, and Baltimore, which goes into the trade deadline. So, as of July 23rd, after that, what is it, ten game homestand, the Royals should know by then what's going to happen. You know, if if they can make some noise and they can win, especially against the Detroit, Minnesota, Texas, Seattle, those four series are going to be the ones you key in on the most probably. If they can win those and have a winning record over this next, let's see, how many games is that? 25 games. So if they can make that happen and, you know, say they even go 15-10, they'd be what, 50-46, right, at the All-Star break. I mean, depending on what Cleveland does, you know, I think you're doing okay at that point. You can afford to stick and stay and roll with trying to make this thing happen. You know, hopefully you're even better than that. You go, maybe they go 17-8 instead of 15-10. You know, and then things get real crazy. But you know, if it's the reverse and you go 10-15. You go 8-17 or something like that. You know, if you go 10-15, I mean, they're 45-51. You know, you're not technically out of it, but for all intents and purposes, you are. So you're still giving yourself, you know, a little over a week to get some trades happening and some things rolling. So if I'm the Royals, I'm circling July 23rd to see where we're at on that at that point in time, because you've had a lot of series against division opponents and teams that you're going to be up against. And that's going to give you a really good idea of where they are and where they can go from here, and specifically also to see, you know, how Cleveland goes from there. Let's see. Let's pull up Cleveland's schedule here. Let's see who they're going to face kind of over the next 20-some-odd games or so to see how their schedule shakes out. So they've got Baltimore.
Hopefully they play all of the NL West teams.
Yeah, right?
Just winning
everything. Yeah, that's obscene. The Diamondbacks are in third place, and they would be leading every other division except for one.
Yeah.
So that's pretty crazy. So let's see. Cleveland is finishing up a series against Baltimore. Then they've got Minnesota again in Cleveland. So, you know, that's kind of one of those double-edged swords where, you know, it helps the Royals if Cleveland takes care of business against Minnesota. But with two series against Minnesota coming up in the next 4-game series. So, but with that coming up in the next 10 games for the Royals, you almost want Minnesota to beat Cleveland, right? So if they, even though that makes it harder on you overall, I think with the chance to take care of business yourself against Minnesota, if they can keep Cleveland down for you a little bit, then I think in the end it factors to benefit the Royals the most. But so they've got Minnesota, this is Cleveland, and then they've got Texas after that, and then Detroit after that. And then San Diego
at home.
No, it's not. And then Detroit at home. And then Oakland on the road. And then the Giants on the road. So their schedule fattens up for them pretty well. So
yeah.
The Royals need to make some noise on this next 20-game stretch to make sure they can keep pace with Cleveland. Because it looks like if Cleveland's heating up like the Royals, this is going to be a really good opportunity for them to make some hay in this next stretch of 20 or so games that they've got. And if you're a Cleveland fan, that's what you're probably looking at right now, thinking, you know, things aren't so bad for you. So we'll kind of see how that rolls out. But one thing that I wanted to hit on before we even talk anymore, we talked about that April haunting the Royals. And speaking of haunting the Royals, we all know that the Balboni Homer Demon has been living in the bowels of Kauffman Stadium for time immemorial. It's actually very, very memorial. It's 1985. It's been 30 years, yeah. Or 32 years that he's been living under there. But we are updating you of the Balboni Watch. And we have an addition to the Balboni Watch this week. Of course, as we talked about today, Salvador Perez's game-winning home run, Grand Slam, puts him at 15 for the season. And Mike Moustakas, who has hit a home run since we last recorded, he's at 19 now. And through 71 games, Steve Balboni was at 13 home runs. So not only do we have one opportunity, we have two opportunities to see Royals history, folks. Both Mike Moustakas, who's well on his way in terms of pace, in terms of home run pace, and Salvador Perez, who's now on his way as well in terms of home run pace to beating the record. So wouldn't that be something? All these years, and then 1 year, boom, two players break the record in the same year. That would be super fun. It'd be almost like the Royals version of 1998 Maguire Sosa battling down to who is going to break the record, and then except it's just a completely meaningless Royals record of 36 home runs. And
right,
but Sally and Moose are going back and forth. You know, I mean, if the Royals are hot and the Royals are in the playoff race and they're really close. And they go down the stretch, and Moose and Salvi are both, you know, within striking distance of that record. Man, that's going to be a lot of fun to watch because you know Salvi and Moose are going to have a ton of fun with that if they're both in the race there for that. So that's kind of cool. I'm really excited to see. You know, that's just kind of another thing to add to. It's the a couple weeks ago, it seemed like that might be the only thing to keep tabs on for the rest of the season, but now it's just like that could be. Kind of something that makes it even more fun for this team to build on, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I want it to happen, and it's nice to have Sal kind of jump up there and get into the mix too, because, you know, hey, I think he's on pace for about 34 homers or so. He's, you know, been hitting with a lot of power.
Is he on back? I guess I shouldn't say on pace for. Yeah, I guess I misspoke. He's ahead of where Balboni was, but that doesn't necessarily. I didn't do the math, but he's not necessarily on pace. That's right.
Yeah, so, good call. Per game for Sal, who, you know, will have some more days off than Moustakas, he's, you know, I don't know. That might be the thing that keeps him from it. It's awfully hard for a catcher to hit, you know, 20 homers sometimes. So,
right.
So, but, you know, you've at least got a second guy who's in the mix. And if they are able to retain Moustakas for the full season, I mean, the way he's hitting them off lefties, hit one off Chris Sale, he's hitting them, you know, a couple miles. You know, he's not getting cheated on them. It looks for real. It looks exactly like what you always thought you would see from him when he was in the minors and when he came up. And, you know, just for so often, he just wasn't making enough contact, or, you know, he had so many pop-ups for so many years and so often would pull it into the shift. And now he's just hitting it over the shift a lot of the time. So it's a lot of fun to watch him and see him in, you know, among the leaders in home runs for the American League. Because, again, another thing is that it just doesn't happen that often that a Royals in that group. You know, it's just, I'm not used to it. The Royals now, I didn't check where they are in relation to past teams, but they've probably passed three or four other Royals teams in years gone by.
Well, they've got 85 home runs as a team. I mean, I think they had right around 95 in 2014, wasn't it? I mean, they didn't have less than 100 for the whole season.
Yeah. Yeah, and we're not even July.
No.
It's crazy. I mean, that was one of the things before the season. It was like, they're going to break the record. I just, you know, was kind of wishful thinking. I thought you'd get a lot more.
Wasn't that a bold prediction of yours?
It was, and I guess that wasn't bold enough because they're going to shatter it. They're not just going to break it. So, I mean, they might be, God, by the All-Star break in a couple weeks, they'll probably be over 100. That's crazy. Man, so if they can get Moose to hit that 40, well, that would be great. That would be a nice little cherry on top for everything. So it's good to see that. And, you know, it's nice to see that Kauffman Stadium isn't the hindrance that it once was, because they're hitting home runs there too.
Yes, very, very good to see. And then you've got, you know, players like Jorge Bonifacio, who's been an incredibly nice surprise, who, mm-hmm. You know, his 10 home runs for Bonifacio in limited, you know, 51 games is all that he's played, and he's been able to make that kind of noise. So you've got, you know, Brandon Moss has had his struggles definitely, but he's still got 9 home runs, and Hosmer, even off to his bad start, he's got 8. So we were talking about it kind of before the show, but if you look at Lorenzo Cain, who's got 10, Bonifacio's got 10, Perez with 14, Moose with 19, and then if you throw Moss and Hosmer in there with 8 or with 9 and 8 respectively, you know, there's an outside shot at all 6 of those players hitting 20 home runs. I mean, which is absurd for a Royals team.
There were a lot of years where the Royals didn't get one guy to do that.
Exactly.
A lot of years where they didn't get one guy to do that. Where,
yeah,
Jose Guillen cut on August 11th or something, still leads your team in home runs with like 16.
I mean, we thought last year was crazy with you know, Hosmer hitting 25 and Morales hit 30, and Perez had 20 last year, didn't he?
So yeah, they had like 22 or something.
Yeah, so he had, you know, so there were 3 players last year, and probably would have been 4 if Moose would have been healthy for the whole season.
Yep.
But, you know, so that's nuts right there when you really think about it. Specifically the Jorge Bonifacio scenario, yeah, where, I mean, who knew? This guy's just been launching home runs.
He's basically given you the offensive production you would have hoped for from Jorge Soler. But yes, it just happened that, you know, Soler was hurt. Bonifacio got the opportunity to play. When Soler was able to come back, Bonifacio was still playing well. And there was no reason to make change in playing time. And Soler has been playing well in Omaha, but you know, Bonifacio still has the job. So it's, you know, it's a little awkward, but it's fine. You know.
Yeah. And I don't think he's got, I don't think he's got a chance at 20, but Whit Merrifield's got 6 home runs.
Yeah.
Whit Merrifield. I mean, this, you know, there's always that question of whether the Royals as an organization shifting towards a power-focused team, if that's a good idea based on playing 81 games in Kauffman Stadium every year. And if you remember a few seasons ago before the World Series runs and everything, there was kind of that they had talked about switching to having a more home-run, power-focused team, and the season where – the off season where Ned Yost was throwing out 30 home run seasons to everybody like Oprah. We made fun of him on the show for it. And, you know, they kind of ditched that and said, that's not working for us. That's not the team we are. Let's move something else. And of course they won on the World Series. But, so I think there was that kind of same consternation, if you will, of in the off season of looking at this and saying, is this the right idea? Is this where they should be going? And, you know, when you see someone like Whit Merrifield hitting 6 home runs, that's just setting the world on fire, of course, but it's showing that, okay, you know, with a little bit more focus on that, then, hey, there's some additional results that have been achieved. And Merrifield's got a 104 OPS plus right now, and he's one of 5 Royals that have an OPS plus above 100, and that's not including Bonifacio, who's got an OPS plus of 98. So, you know, they're starting to come around and, you know, they're speaking of anchors like you were earlier, you know, there's the Alcides Escobars of the world who are doing terrible. But, you know, Gordon, who it took him, this is the longest of his career that he had, I mean, well into May before he hit his first home run, you know, he's got 3 now. So he's, I mean, he's having still a terrible season by every stretch of the imagination, but starting to see a few signs that maybe he can right the ship a little bit. You know, he's still struggling mightily, but you know, he's starting to show more signs than the first month and a half or so where it just looked like there was nothing going on with Gordon. So
yeah.
You know, that's something that we haven't really delved into so far this season, because it seems like there's been so many other things to talk about.
There have been a lot of other fingers to point.
Yes, specifically with you know, how bad of a start Eric Cosmer got off to. But so we'll probably have to revisit Gordon here in the next week or two and see kind of what we can glean from all that. But it's been nice to see the added emphasis on power kind of take off a little bit. And you know, it's cool to – it was always a thing I remember growing up, and the Royals were so terrible all the time. And, you know, especially if you ever went to a Royals-Cardinals series, it was like – every time Albert Pujols came up, not only did it seem like he hit a home run anyway, but it there was that fear. You know, it was like, oh man, any swing, and it's over. It's just gone. And there wasn't a Royal that was like that growing up, really, for me. You know, because I was, you know, when I was old enough to kind of understand, it was kind of the end of the George Brett era. And, you know, Carlos Beltran and Mike Sweeney were kind of like that with the Royals. But, you know, Beltran really developed a lot of his kind of fear, you know, that kind of fearful hitter kind of after his time with the Royals. And Sweeney was a little bit like that way, but just lost in the fact that it was just so many terrible teams that he was on.
Right.
But, you know, so now
if Mike Sweeney beats you single-handedly, well, he's got to tip your cap, because nobody else was going to do it.
No. So it's nice to see a team now where, you know, Hosmer can change the game with a swing. Salvador Perez can, like he did today. Moustakas can. You know, Lorenzo Cain can. And, you know, even if it's not a home run, these guys can come through in the clutch like they've shown in the past. So it's really cool. You know, it's been fun, and it's starting to feel fun again. Like last season, I think that was one of the things that was really tough after the highs of 2014 and 15. You know, there wasn't a real point where it just seemed like it was fun, you know, not only for the Royals, but just for the fans. You know, I guess I can't speak for all the fans or for you, but for me, it kind of felt like it just never quite got there. You know, they had that stretch in August or so where things were going pretty well. And it's like, hey, Dylan G is actually pitching well for two or three starts in a row. But, you know, that died out pretty quick, and then they kind of, things kind of came back down to earth. So this is the first time since 2015, really, for me anyway, this last – looking at these last couple weeks where it's felt – I've felt that kind of fun and that kind of energy around the team where, you know, we're going to make something happen. Doesn't matter. You know, things are going to go our way. It didn't – there was never a point where, to me, that it felt like that last year. I mean, do you – you kind of get that same feeling, or did you ever feel that last year at all, or are you feeling that this year yet, or are you still – you still – out?
I don't know. I mean, like last year – I'm trying to remember because the things that I remember most last year are July and August, where July was so bad and then August was so good. It ultimately didn't make a difference. Right. So I'm trying to remember about, like, you know, what happened at the start of the year, how it felt. So I don't know. I mean, if there was nothing all that memorable, I guess, you know, maybe, yeah, it is something that just doesn't stick. This year, you know, I think there was – I mean, there's so much going into the season with the loss of Yordano Ventura that, you know, it was going to be emotionally charged anyway from that point. And then when you add in that a lot of these guys are in their last year of their contracts, you've got to, you know, kind of come to grips with the fact that, you know, a lot of these guys aren't going to be on the team next year. So they've got one more shot. And I don't know, you know, if there was anything – you know, George Brad on the broadcast yesterday was he theorized that a lot of those soon to be free agents came out thinking, you know, hey, I'm going to put a bunch of numbers early, and you know that led to pressure and led to them pressing, and so they didn't perform, and then they kind of gave in to the, you know, the team concept and relaxed a little bit more and just wanted to help the team and started playing better. I don't know. Nobody is really stating anything to that point from the Royals in any interviews or anything, but you know, it kind of seems like now they've gotten to that point where they remember, hey, you know, this, you know, we've done this, we've done all of this before, we've made, you know, these crazy runs to get back from where it looks like you're done to go on a big run and actually get into contention. And you know, they've done 2 years of, you know, high-pressure playoff situations. So, you know, maybe last year they had a bunch of injuries they needed to maybe get right, maybe just recognize that, okay, maybe last year was a letdown, and now they're playing with a lot of that same looseness. I mean, you definitely see that they're having a lot of fun out there, which is kind of normal for this team. But, yeah, it does. I don't know if I feel it yet. Like, I'm excited. I'm having fun watching them. But at the same time, until they're over 500, it doesn't start to feel like that kind of strange inevitability. You know, like in 2014, there was a certain point where they went on that run to get past the Tigers and go into first. And at that point, I think everybody really felt like, okay, they're gonna make the playoffs. It's going to happen. Mm. And then you come into 2015 coming off of a game 7 loss in the World Series. They come out, they win their first 7 games. They're playing great all season. And it's basically from this point through the rest of the season, you know, it was just a big party. I mean, they had the best record in the league and then went and got Johnny Cueto and got Van Zobrist. And at that point, it was like, okay, you know, we knew we were going to be in October. We knew it was going to happen. And, you know, it just kind of rode through the whole summer with that feeling. So at this stage, I think they've got to get through and, you know, maybe in 2 weeks, you know, if they've made up enough ground to where they're right there, like a game behind Cleveland and they're a couple games over 500, that's when I think it'll start getting fun. Because if you're a game behind anybody with 2 months to go, 3 months to go, you can make
that's
that.
Nothing.
Yeah, you can do that. That's a weird bounce in a couple of different games, and you pull ahead of them. And you know, if you know, if they end up getting any kind of an actual lead, if they happen to, God help us all, if they actually pull ahead of Cleveland, that's when it's just going to be crazy. Because you know, I think, you know, we always talk about the limits of the intangibles. But can you imagine this team knowing it's probably their last together and they actually get into a position where they can make a run and get back into the playoffs? you couldn't stop them. They would go, like, they'd leave every little ounce out there. It'd be crazy. So that would be really exciting. That'd be a lot of fun to see. And I hope they play well enough over the next, you know, couple weeks to get into that position and get it to where this whole city just goes crazy, you know, for all of it again.
They've got 9 games left against Cleveland. They don't play Cleveland again until August 18th, surprisingly. So they've got a while where you hope it doesn't get into one of those situations where Cleveland is just as hot and maintains the lead. Because, like, I feel like that's got to be demoralizing for the team, where if you just, like, Rose wins 7 out of 10 and Cleveland wins 8 out of 10. It's like, man, we did all this work. We didn't even gain a game mm-hmm. on Cleveland, and there's nothing we can do because we can't play them to keep them down. So hopefully something like that doesn't happen. But, you know, I completely agree. It's going to be, like, just so much fun if they can get to that point where – they're a few games over 500, game maybe 2 back of Cleveland, and then, you know, start August 18th. They've got 10 games in the next 30 days against Cleveland. Unfortunately, 7 of those are on the road, and 3 of them are in Kauffman. So, you know, that series, if I mean, you could see a scenario definitely where the Royals are, you know, within striking distance for that August 18th series, and a sweep would put them in the lead, or maybe even, you know, just winning 2 out of 3 would put them in first place. I mean, that would be a nothing. It's a weekend series too, so that would be just an absolutely nuts atmosphere out at Kauffman. So it's you know, there's man, that would be a lot of fun. Unfortunately, man. The Royals, they kind of
just when I thought I was out, they pulled me back in.
And that's the schedule's pretty balanced, actually. I mean, when you look at, you know, we kind of talked about the next 20 so odd games, and then you just go down the stretch, and you know, Boston is good, but the Royals just showed they can easily compete with Boston, and you know, Baltimore is kind of right where the Royals are, so that's another wild card team. You know, Seattle, same deal. Cardinals are having their struggles as well. White Sox, Oakland. That's a big stretch. Well, they make up some games.
When you look at teams like Chicago, like Oakland, like maybe even Seattle and Tampa in that August. I mean, that's going to be post trade deadline too. So which guys are still on those teams at that point?
Yep.
No idea. So if you're playing teams that have traded off 3 of their best players, there's, you know, it's even more of an opportunity. But there's nobody that really scares you. I mean, they've got the Rockies down the line, but that's late August. And, you know, they slump and you know, don't do anything over the next 2 months. Well, that series doesn't matter. And, you know, by that time, maybe the Rockies will have cooled off and the Royals catch them at the right time. But, yeah, there's not – I mean, they've already played through Houston. They've already played through the Yankees. They just beat the Red Sox. Those are, like, the 3 scariest teams that would be ahead of them at the moment. I mean, Cleveland, mm-hmm. again, obviously, because Cleveland, you know, depending AL champs and, you know, the class of the division and expected to win the division by everybody. So, yeah, I mean, you want to face Cleveland to get that opportunity, but it's also the toughest matchup you're going to have in the division. But at the same time, it's like, you know, there's, what, 20-some games that might make you feel like, okay, this is going to be a really tough series, and then, you know, a handful that are, okay, this should be very winnable, and then some of those in the middle that it's like we've got a good shot. And, you know, the Royals can take advantage of that. Yeah, let's throw the dang party.
Absolutely. It's, you know, and I, again, don't want to get too far ahead of myself, but, you know, you're looking all the
we're
way.
We're looking at the schedule in August. What the heck?
Yeah, it's might as well. but when you talk about Colorado, you know, and talking about the other NL West teams, the Royals end the season at home. Excuse me, at home, which is good, but a 3-game series against the Diamondbacks. So that could be potentially troublesome, given that Arizona could be fighting for a playoff spot of their own, along with the Royals being in that same boat. So, you know, I think your ideal situation is that you, if you're going to, if you're not going to be already in a playoff spot or already in the division lead going into the final series of the season, you know, I think the ideal scenario is to play a team who's out of it, knows they're out of it, doesn't really care, but you're still locked in, you know. But
yeah,
it doesn't appear like that will be the case with Arizona, who's having a very good season so far. Would be winning the Central by roughly six games. Right now, six. Let's see, four.
And they're in third in their division.
Yeah, six games. Yeah, they're third by two full games. So, take that for what it's worth.
God.
But that's getting too far ahead of ourselves. And I think you're probably. It's good that you kind of talk me down a little bit because the 500 thing is they're still under 500.
They've had
a good stretch. They've won 7-9. Still under 500.
Next week we're going to be talking about the playoff rotation.
Yeah, exactly. you could conceivably, you know, depending on how much of a believer you are in Toronto, you know, Royals could take two out of three from them at home. Detroit, like you said, they're just twiddling their thumbs until they want to start selling. You could take two out of three from them, even though it's on the road, and then you've got Minnesota at home, and that's another weekend series, four games, and it's actually a doubleheader on Saturday, July 4th weekend. So Royals are going to be, that's going to be a pretty, if the Royals are still, you know, if they've been improving at that point, so they'll be over 500, then if they take, they'd be 4-2 out of the next six games, right? So they'd be 39 and 38. And, you know, maybe they're still call it three games back of Cleveland. Maybe they're tied with the Twins, then I mean that's going to be a pretty nuts atmosphere there for a four-game stretch. And you know, if they take three out of four from Minnesota, then next thing you know, look
it
out.
Might be a two-team race at that point.
And again, who knows what Cleveland will do? But man, so I don't know. It's
we'll
fun.
See.
It's good. It's good that you talk me down because they're still below 500, but. Things are much more positive now. This is definitely the high point. The highest point of the season so far.
Yeah, I mean they were 7-7 at one point. Does that count? Whatever. But at this stage, yeah, I mean they're playing pretty well in all facets. You know, we were talking a little bit earlier about like, okay, well, if they did add guys, I mean. You know, they feel, I've at least, you know, not talking to anybody in the Royals front office or anything, but I feel like they are pretty comfortable with everybody they have right now. I mean, you might think about trying to find a way to upgrade at DH, maybe. Brandon Moss hasn't been great. He's had flashes of power, but overall the production hasn't been great. You know, maybe that's an opportunity. They have a ton of lefties in the bullpen. You know, Brian Flynn's about to come back, too. So you'll have Flynn, Alexander, Travis Wood. I'm forgetting somebody. Minor.
Oh, yep.
Best one in there right now. Yeah. So, you know, and then Flynn comes back. I mean, that's a lot of guys thrown from that side, and that's uncharacteristic for the Royals. So maybe a righty would be in order. You know, maybe you know, just some middle reliever, not necessarily like an elite closer level type of guy, but just another arm to be, you know, set up there, you know, Ryan Madsen role kind of thing. Maybe Ryan Madsen himself, who knows? I mean, he's probably going to be available.
Interestingly enough, I do believe there is a man in the Royals organization right now. He's a right-hander who's recently been switched to a relief pitcher role. I won't say his name.
No, if you say his name, he will fall apart.
He may. He just very well may. But that's
thought about that too.
If that happens, then all bets are off on everything, and Balboni's record will get broken twice. The Royals are going to make the playoffs and maybe even make the World Series again. I mean, that's the type of sign we're looking at here. If that actually occurs, then heads will explode.
Anything is possible. Anything.
Absolutely.
We're going to Mars.
Going to Mars.
Let's do it.
Going to win on Mars.
We're going to win on Mars.
That's right.
Get 50 homers on Mars.
Boom.
I don't know. What's the what is the gravitational pull on Mars?
I want to say it's like a... Don't quote me on this, but like 0.85 of what it is on Earth. That's what I'm going with. Let's check this out. We're gonna drop some knowledge on here.
You're gonna learn about Mars today.
Gravitational pull on Mars. That's an autocomplete on Google. So
does it follow also and home run rates?
Yeah,
probably not.
So Earth's gravity is measured as 9.8 meters per second squared. And Mars is 3.7 meters, so I was way off.
Oh, wow.
So that's, roughly 35%-ish. I don't know how to do the math, but so there's
that.
Are
you an accountant?
I am an accountant, but I usually have my 10-key with me.
You have 10-key and spreadsheets.
That's right, and that's green fair. See-through visor.
Sure.
So, well, I'm doing it now. 37%. So I was close. I said 35. 37% for Mars gravity.
Huh.
Quite a few more home runs, I would think. Baboni Homer Demon would not be able to survive in that sort of gravitational environment.
No, or the atmosphere, or lack of atmosphere.
Yeah. Nor would anybody who could actually hit a home run.
No, there are a lot of problems with this theory.
Yes, there are. But you know what?
Let's do it anyway.
If you know who ends up coming up to pitch in the major leagues, then Mars baseball is a possibility.
Yeah.
Is there anything? Have we missed anything that's happened?
We got all the way to Mars. I think we covered everything we could possibly cover. Once you start talking about planets, I think it's pretty much
over.
Pretty much done, yeah.
We knew it was possible that things may go off the rails tonight, and
we were working without a net. Like the net is all that strong any other day, but usually we almost have like the back of a napkin outline. Not today.
No.
We were just happy that Sal Perez hit a homer really long way with a bunch of guys on base.
Absolutely.
It's pretty cool.
So with that, I think we'll leave you. Fun. Been a fun last, couple weeks for the Royals. We're really hoping they can keep this going. Big series against Toronto this weekend. Rolling into just some big series moving forward here for the next 10 days or so. So hopefully Royals give us a lot more positive things to talk about, more grand slams, more home runs, whatever the case may be. But regardless, we'll be back next week to talk more Royals, however well they do. Be sure to tune in next week. And while you're waiting for that glorious podcast to drop yet again next week after listening to this one, be sure to visit our sponsors, Kelly's Westport Inn, if you want to have a good time. In Westport, of course, go there where my wife has a friend in town who is from Kansas City, but she doesn't live here currently, and she was back in town and talking about how she had gone out the other night and went to Kelly's, and she's like, man, I don't remember there being a line all the way out the door and down the block to go to Kelly's. But it's like, hey, it's once they started sponsoring that Kansas City baseball vault, people just started pouring into Kelly's.
That's what happens.
That's how it goes. The baseball vault bump is what we like to call it. So be sure to go to Kelly's. Always a good time. And be sure to visit bpkansascity.com. Fantastic stuff out there. Clint Scholes' articles on the draft are up. We talked to him last week, if you recall, about the draft, and he gave you he was dropping some info on a lot of the new Royals players in the organization. But he did a formal write-up on all the Royals draft picks. Fantastic stuff. Like, if you're curious about it at all, definitely be sure to go and check it out. You can check on Twitter at our timelines. We've all been tweeting out all his articles because they're worth it. Fantastic stuff. Definitely go and look at that. And there's also a interview with Lonnie Goldberg, who works in the Royals front office. And what is his title? I cannot even recall. Is he scouting director?
Director of scouting, yeah.
Yep. So, director of scouting. That sounds more professional than scouting director. Director of scouting.
I think it'd probably be officially like vice president and director of scouting. I don't, you know.
Oh, yeah.
You know how titles go in corporate America.
Indeed.
But yeah, a lot of really good insight from Lonnie, not just entirely on draft, a lot of other minor leaguers. Nicky Lopez, there's some talk about him and some others. So it's good insight into kind of the approach the Royals were taking into this draft and, you know, kind of where they've been in the past couple of years in the draft. So really cool of Clint to get that opportunity and to share the audio with us and also with all of you.
Absolutely. So thanks to Clint for all the hard work he put in at the draft. That was kind of his time to shine, if you will, and shine he did. Definitely lots of good stuff. So definitely go check all that out and that fantastic interview he did with Lonnie Goldberg. But also, don't forget, plenty of other fantastic stuff. There was a very interesting article from Dave Lesky today where lots of very good pop culture references. So if you're into that sort of thing, be sure to tune in to that article and give that a check. And then, of course, he'll always have his Friday notes this weekend, which should have a lot of exciting stuff as the Royals have heated up lately, not to mention all the other fantastic articles that we put up. So be sure to visit both Kelly's and BP Kansas City. In between listening to the podcast, which we will be back next week. So until then, we will see you next time. Thanks for stopping by. And as always, go Royals. Is there life on Mars?
Thank you for listening to the Kansas City Baseball Vault. You can follow us on Twitter at KC Baseball Vault. You can also find us on Baseball Prospectus Kansas City at bpkansascity.com. You can follow BPKC on Twitter at bprokansascity. Also, you can subscribe to the podcast through iTunes, through Stitcher, or whatever podcast app you like. And if you have any questions, comments, or if you just want to say hi, send those emails to kansascitybaseballvault@gmail.com. Beat the to the north abroad. Rule Britannia.